So as Luca said, in this presentation, I will discuss Karolian amplitudes and flat space holography. So this will be based on three papers. Two of them have been done in collaboration with Laura Donnet, Adrien Furucci, and Yannick Herfray. And the third one was put out in December and was done in collaboration with Lionel Mazin and Akshay Yeleshpour-Sritan. So this was done with the Oxford group. So let me start with some broad motivation for doing this research. So we all know this holographic principle, which says that gravity in a given space-time region can be encoded on the lower dimensional boundary of that region. And we have, of course, an explicit realization of this holographic principle with the famous ADS-CFT correspondence. So in this talk, I will essentially focus on a bottom-up approach of holography, which means that I will try to deduce some aspects of the dual theory living at the boundary, starting with what we know of gravity in the bulk. So that will be my approach in this talk. And already at the level of ADS-CFT, you can make some interesting observations for why this bottom-up approach is indeed interesting in that context. So first, you can notice that the asymptotic symmetries in ADS are given by the conformal symmetries at the boundary of the space-time. And in the case of ADS, the boundary is time-like. So this is a general feature of holography that the asymptotic symmetries of the ball theory correspond to the global symmetries of the dual theory. And this kind of holography respects that. And the other important features about ADS-CFT is that it's a perfect system to study quantum gravity in a box. So it means that in practice, you are describing a closed gravitational system. And this can be implemented, for instance, by imposing some Dirichlet boundary conditions. So another question that I would like to ask in this talk is, how general is the holographic principle? And in particular, does it extend to the case of asymptotically flat space-time, which are depicted here? So this is the program of flat space holography. And flat space-time are interesting for a large range of phenomena that goes from collider physics to astrophysics below the cosmological scale. There are, however, some important obstructions towards flat space holography if I compare that with the ADS case. So here, the boundary of the space-time is a null boundary with scry plus, future null infinity, and scry minus, past null infinity. And in particular, the asymptotic symmetries that will be induced on that boundary will be the Bondi-Metzner-Sachs group, or the BMS group for short. And the second feature about flat space is that this is the perfect tool to describe actually an open gravitational system. Because here, basically, the radiation, which is depicted here in red in the conformal diagram, is allowed to go through the space-time boundary. So the charge that will be associated with these BMS symmetries will not be conserved in time. So the question that I would like to ask in this talk is how to formulate flat space holography. And by that, I mean a correspondence between gravity in asymptotically flat space-time. And in this talk, I will essentially focus on the four-dimensional case and a lower dimensional field theory without gravity. So two proposals have been discussed in the literature. There is this celestial holography proposal where the dual theory is a two-dimensional CFT that is living on the celestial sphere here. But there is another proposal which has been developed in parallel, and this is called Karolian holography. So in that case, the dual theory will be a three-dimensional Karolian CFT that will be living at null infinity, so at scry plus and scry minus. So even if these two proposals for flat space holography seem completely different, just even by the dimensions of the dual theory, we have actually shown in that paper that they were related. So it means that you can basically choose the approach that you want to study flat space holography. So here are the objectives of this talk. The first point is that I would like to convince you that this Karolian holography is useful to tackle the problem of flat space holography. And in particular, if you are interested with by the relation with the IDS-CFT correspondence. And the other thing that I would like to do in this talk is to define the notion of Carolian amplitude, which will allow me to recast the S matrix in a Carolian language. So let me start with some basics. What is Carolian physics and Carolian holography? So here, the word Carol refers to this ultra-relativistic limit, C going to zero, so C is the speed of light, that was considered by Lévy-Leblanc in 65. So you send the speed of light going to zero. And when you look at this ultra-relativistic limit at the level of the Poincaré algebra, what you can show is that it does not affect the translation generators and nor the rotation generators. But it will affect the boost, because you have a term here that involves the speed of light. And so in the limit C going to zero, you will get what we call the Carolian boost, whose action on the coordinates are given here. So basically, a Carolian boost will affect the time coordinates, but will not affect the space coordinates. So this is the kind of opposite of maybe the more standard Galilean boost, which amounts to change the space coordinate without affecting the time. And they are obtained by taking the limit C going to infinity once you start with the Lorentzian boost. So another way to understand this Carolian limit is to look at the causal structure of the space-time that can be characterized by some light cones. And basically, if you take this C going to zero limit, what you can show is that the light cone will shrink in two lines. So roughly speaking, it means that in a Carolian space-time, the particles are not allowed to move. Otherwise, they will be tachyonic. So now if you implement this C going to zero limit at the level of the Poincaré algebra, you will find the following commutation relations. So this is just a Yonu-Wigner contraction of the Poincaré algebra in the limit C going to zero. And this is what we call the Carolian algebra. So it's a bit different than Poincaré. For example, you can show that the Hamiltonian is a central term in the algebra. That's one of the differences. There is also an analog discussion at the level of the conformal algebra. So if you start with SOD, 2, which is the conformal algebra in D dimensions, and that you take the limit C going to zero, you will get what we call the global conformal Carolian algebra. This is just obtained from the Carolian algebra by adding the dilatation and the Carolian special conformal transformations. So now you may wonder, where does the name Carol come from? So actually, this refers to Lewis Carroll, who was the author of Alice in Wonderland. And this was proposed by Lévy-Leblanc because there is a scene which is called the Mad Tea Party in Alice Adventure, where the length of time interval is completely arbitrary. And this is actually a bit reminiscent of what happens here with the Carolian boost that you can, where you can change the time coordinate without affecting the space. So let me also say that besides his interest for flat space holography, on which I will mention, on which I will focus in this talk, Carolian physics is interesting for a large range of phenomena. So for example, if you're interested by black hole physics, cosmologies, fractons, or fluid, then Carolian physics might be useful. So this is a kind of very active topic of research. Okay. So now you can also implement this Carolian limit at the level of the geometry. So if you start with a relativistic metric that I will take to be just the flat Minkowski metric here, and I will just reinstall the dependence in the speed of light. Then if I take C going to zero, I get this degenerate metric in the limit that has no legs in the time direction. Of course, this metric cannot be inverted on the space-time because it's degenerate. So it means that if you don't want to lose any information in the limit, you also have to take the limit of the inverse metric. And this limit gives you a vector field, n, which has only legs in the time direction. And basically, this field, this vector field, is in the kernel of the first metric. So this allows me to define what I mean by a Carolean geometry. So this is just the data of a degenerate metric, QAB. So here, this is just an example of that. And a vector field N, which is in the kernel of this metric. So that's the definition of a Carolean geometry. And so now the Carolean algebra that I introduced in my previous slides just corresponds to the algebra of symmetries for this Carolean geometry. So these are the xi bar that will preserve this Carolean structure. You can also define the conformal Carolean algebra as the algebra of conformal symmetries for the Carolean geometry. So they will preserve the metric and the vector field up to some rescalings. So now the question that you may ask is, why is this all relevant for null infinity, so the boundary of flat space? Well, remember here that scry is a null hypersurface, which means that the metric which will be induced there will be degenerate. So you have already one part of the Carolean structure, but what you can actually show is that there is a conformal Carolean structure which is induced at null infinity by the conformal compactification. And the BMS symmetries, which are the asymptotic symmetries in flat space, just correspond to the conformal symmetries of this Carolean structure at null infinity. So this allows me to state the first entry of the holographic dictionary, which basically states that the asymptotic symmetries in the bulk, which are given by these BMS symmetries in D plus one dimensions, correspond to the conformal Carolean algebra in D dimensions. So D is the dimension of the boundary.
If the kernel was bigger than one dimension,
the kernel, yes, yes.
Right. You could have like a bigger, maybe two times.
Right.
Uh-huh. Is there a generalization of Carolean?
I don't think it has been considered in the literature. I know Daniel always asks me this question, if there are other options to consider some metric with more zero, but I don't think it has been discussed, actually. For us, there is only one degenerate direction with scry, but yeah. Okay, so now I'm basically ready to state this Carolean holography correspondence, which basically suggests that gravity in D plus one dimensions in asymptotically flat space-time is dual to a D-dimensional conformal Carolean field theory. So a theory that is living at scry and which has the BMS symmetries as global space-time symmetries. So that's what I mean by a Carolean CFT. That's the word that I will use to refer to these theories at scry. So this obeys, of course, the standard holographic correspondence where the asymptotic symmetries in the bulk correspond to the global symmetries in the dual theory, and there will be space-time symmetries in that case. So these Carolean CFT have been considered in the literature. There are many examples on how you can construct such theories, and they are basically obtained by taking the C going to zero limit of standard relativistic CFT. Let me also say that this Carolean holography proposal follows a similar pattern than the IDS CFT correspondence because it's a codimension one holography. And indeed, most of the results that have been found in Carolean holography are obtained by taking lambda, so the cosmological constant going to zero, by taking the flat limit of what we know in IDS CFT. And the beautiful thing is that you can show that this flat limit in the bulk induces an ultra-relativistic limit or a Carolean limit at the boundary, which corresponds to this limit C going to zero. So this explains basically how you go from a CFT that is living at the boundary of IDS to a Carolean CFT, which is living at the boundary of flat space. Okay. So now let me state a few facts about Carolean holography and maybe why it's interesting and what has been done in that direction. First, everything that I've said here is basically dimension agnostic. So it's in principle valid for any space-time dimensions. There is a clear relation between the ALES-CFT correspondence and flat space holography through this flat limit procedure that I've just mentioned. And this flat limit procedure was actually applied very successfully in the context of three-dimensional gravity. So in that context, Carolian holography is working very well. So here I'm just listing a few examples of things that you can do in flat space holography that are very similar to the result that you can get for ADS3 CFT2. First, what you can show is that if you start with the gravitational solution space of gravity, and that you take this flat limit in the bulk, you get the solution space in flat space. And the symmetries here at the boundary of ADS, which correspond to the conformal symmetries, will contract into this BMS3 symmetries in flat space. You can also match the entropy between the bulk and the boundary theories. There is also a formula for the entanglement entropy in the dual theory. You can compute some correlation functions of Carolian stress tensor using some kind of holographic renormalization procedure. You can also write some effective actions for the dual theory. And recently, for example, in this paper with Luca and collaborators, we have discussed the notion of holographic anomaly in 3D flat space. So Carolian holography was also applied in other contexts than three dimensions. So some of the results that are obtained here can be uplifted in four dimensions. So for example, you can show that the flat limit of the gravitational phase space and the corresponding limit at the boundary for the symmetries also works in four dimensions. This is a bit more complicated because of the radiation. This is also very successful in the context of the fluid gravity correspondence. So if you start with the fluid gravity in ADS and that you take the flat limit, you get a Carolian fluid, which is living at null infinity. You can also write some explicit Carolian CFT actions at the boundary of 4D flat space, which are relevant for holography. And finally, the question that one might ask here is, what is the relation between this Carolian holography approach and the S matrix and the celestial amplitudes? So that's actually one of the points I will try to clarify in the talk. Okay, questions about the introductory part? Yes?
You guys can ask a question about the, so what do you know what the Carolian limit of, like, let's say, which I'm going to work in CFT. Like, what is that?
Oh, of what? Of which CFT?
WZW CFT.
Right. So, for example, there is a kind of model which is called, this is a Carolian Liouville theory. So, basically, if you start with the Liouville theory, which is a CFT, and you can take the Carolian limit of that, and you get this Carolian Liouville theory, and this is actually relevant for flat space holography. So, in three dimensions, you can actually show that these actions encode the information about the asymptotic dynamics in the space-time. So the evolution of the mass and the angular momentum in that context. So there are examples that have been worked out in the literature. Okay, so let me review the solution space of gravity in four dimensions. And to do that, I will work in the so-called Bondi gauge, which is particularly well adapted if you want to study the physics near null infinity. So here, the Bondi coordinates are given by U, which is a retarded time coordinate in the space-time. And so it will flow along the null boundary, scribe plus. R is a radial coordinate with respect to which you can make the expansion of the metric. And R going to infinity correspond to the boundary of the space-time. And Z and Z bar here, these XA coordinates, are just the coordinates on the celestial sphere. So this metric here is asymptotically flat, which means that if you take R going to infinity, you obtain the Minkowski metric. That's the definition for asymptotic flatness. But if you go a bit into the bulk, you will get some correction in 1 over R with respect to this Minkowski metric. And this correction will basically be dictated by Einstein's equation. So for example, here at this order in the expansion, you get what we call the asymptotic shear, which is a symmetric and trace-free tensor. If you take the time derivative of the shear, you get the bonding use tensor, which, as I will explain in a minute, contains information about the outgoing radiation in the space-time. And this is basically what is depicted here in red in the diagram. So these are gravitational waves going through the boundary. And at this order here, you get the bonding mass aspect. And Na here is called the angular momentum aspect. So here I'm focusing on Scry plus, but you have an analog story at Scry minus if you work in the so-called advanced bonding coordinates. So now you can show that Einstein's equation also implies some, you can see them as time evolution or constraints equation on the mass and the angular momentum. So you get these equations here. And what you can basically see is that what breaks the conservation of the mass and the angular momentum is this bonding use tensor that I've just introduced. So this is what you find in the right-hand side. And this is basically the reason for why you have some, this space-time is leaky. So this, basically the charges will be non-conserved in that context. And to give you some intuition, if you take the first equation and that you integrate it over the celestial sphere, you get the so-called bonding mass loss formula, which is given in the box here. So it's a very important formula in GR. And it basically tells you that the mass of the gravitational system decreases in time, so along the time at Scry plus, because of the emission of gravitational waves, which are contained in this term, and because of the negative sign that you have here. So that's one of the interests to work at non-infinity, is that it gives you some kind of very important information about the dynamics of the system. So let me just summarize here that the solution space of gravity in four dimensions, at leading order at least, is parametrized by the bonding mass aspect and the angular momentum aspect, plus this asymptotic shear here that basically contains information about the radiation in the spacetime, the gravitational waves. So now, as I mentioned before, the asymptotic symmetries in flat space, so these are the diffeomorphism in the space-time, that basically preserve the boundary conditions for the metric to be asymptotically flat, and which will have a non-trivial effect at the boundary. So they are given by these BMS symmetries that I mentioned before. And for the focus of this talk, I will work with the extended BMS algebra, which is given by this semi-direct product between the conformal symmetries in two dimensions, and the supertranslations. So if you look at the restriction of the BMS symmetries at the boundary, which are the relevant physical transformations, you will get these vector fields. So this is a vector field living at Scry. And it will be parametrized by two types of functions. So you have the T function here, which depends on Z and Z bar, the coordinates on the celestial sphere. So these are called the supertranslations. And you have the y and y bar function here, which are called the superrotations. And they satisfy the conformal Killing equation in two dimensions. So now, in physics, once you have some symmetries, a natural thing to do is to build some charges. And in the context of asymptotic symmetries, these charges will be surface charges. So they will be defined at a cut of Scry, so namely at a surface U equal constant. And usually the way to build these charges is to use the so-called covariant phase space formalism. So you have some kind of Noether methods to build these charges. In the context of 4D flat space, it's a bit complicated because the charges are not conserved. And there is also a question of non-integrability, which means that you have to add some additional ingredients in the story. But this is basically the best expression we have for these charges associated with the BMS symmetries. So the first term here is just the supertranslation charge. So T is the supertranslation parameter, and this purely M here is basically the mass. So this is the bonding mass aspect plus some correction terms involving the shear and the news. And similarly here, you have the so-called superrotation charge, which involves this curly N that can be seen as a kind of angular momentum aspect. So these expressions here look a bit complicated in metric formalism. But if you go into the Newman-Penrose formalism, they take a very simple form in terms of the component of the vital tensor in the Newman-Unti tetrad. So that's one of the advantages of this formalism. So now, as I told you before, this charge will be non-conserved. So if you take the time derivative of this charge defined at the cut of scry, you will get a flux term here in the right-hand side, which is due to the gravitational waves in the space-time. But the charge here has a nice property that once you turn off the radiation, so once you set the bonding use to zero, then the charge will be conserved. So that's one of the nice properties about this expression here. So now I would like to provide a Carolian flavor on everything that I've said now. So I will work with the same coordinate, the bondi coordinates induced at the boundary. As I told you before, you have this Carolian structure at null infinity, which is given by this degenerate metric, and you have a zero in front of the du square. And the vector field, which is in the kernel of the metric, will be just along the du direction. And the BMS symmetries will precisely correspond to the conformal symmetries of this Carolian structure. So now I will assume that there is a three-dimensional Carolian CFT living at scry. And once you don't know anything about the Carolian CFT, the only thing that you can build, which is natural, is a neutral current, so a current associated with these BMS symmetries. And here I will assume that my current takes the form of a Brown-York current. So this is the contraction of psi bar here, which is a BMS parameter. And CAB here is called a Carolian stress tensor. Okay. So this Carolian stress tensor will satisfy some constraints with the symmetries. So this comes from the Ward identities. And these constraints are a bit analogous to those that you get for a stress tensor in CFT. For example, you get the conservation of the stress tensor here. But they are slightly different. For example, if you look at the Carolian boost, they will impose that this component of the stress tensor just vanishes. Okay. So now the question is how to relate the quantities defined at the boundary, which is this Carolian stress tensor that I've just introduced, and the functions appearing in the expansion of the bondi metric. So in the left-hand side here, you have just the VEV of the holographic, the Carolian stress tensor. And in the right-hand side, you find this curly M and this curly N that I introduced before, and that are functions here appearing in the bondi expansion. So that's the kind of correspondence between boundary and bulk quantities. So basically, this stress tensor will contain the information about the mass and the angular momentum of the solution. And the way that we found this dictionary is just by identifying the boundary neutral charge that are built out of this stress tensor with the surface charges obtained from a bulk asymptotic symmetry analysis using some covariant phase space methods. So this identification is a bit reminiscent of what you have in the context of ADS CFT, where you will identify the stress tensor of the holographic CFT with some sublining order in the expansion of the metric. Okay, so this is for four dimensions. And this is the flat space analog of that. So just for these slides, let me focus on a particular subsector of gravity in four dimensions, which is this non-radiative subsector. So for one moment, I will set this bonding use tensor to zero, which means that there is no gravitational waves in my space-time, and this, for instance, contains the Kerr solution. This is exactly what I mean by non-radiative. So this is a bit more precise, but this definition is consistent with the symmetries, but the details do not really matter. And I like this subsector because it's very similar to three-dimensional gravity, where Carolian holography was very successful. And there are many similar features. So for instance, in that case, the charges are conserved because there is no outgoing gravitational wave in the space-time. You can also show that the mass and the angular momentum tensor transform in this quadrant representation of the BMS algebra. So this is something that was known in three dimensions, but that also works in 4D in absence of radiation. And this technical remark allows you to build some geometric action living at the boundary of flat space, which are called these BMS geometric action. And they correspond to some Carolian CFT actions that will describe the asymptotic dynamics in the bulk. So they will capture the conservation of the mass and the angular momentum. And what you can show is that if you build the stress tensor associated with this Carolian CFT and that you use the momentum map, you will basically reproduce this holographic dictionary that I have mentioned here. Here, I'm just making a parallel between holography in ADS and holography in flat space. So this table just summarizes everything that I have said at this stage. And the nice thing here is that basically, you can just take the flat limit of what is on the left on side, and then you can get what is on the right on side using this ultra-relativistic limit at the boundary and the relation between the symmetries. So questions at this stage? So if not, I will ask the question how to include the radiation in this picture, because for now I've just discussed non-radiative space-time. So the problem is that you can no longer assume that the currents are conserved at the boundary, the currents that were constructed out of the Carolian stress tensor, because we know that the BMS charges obey some flux balance laws. There is a flux term here in the right-hand side. And this flux term plays the role of a kind of external source for the non-radiative sector. And if you take this observation seriously, so if you consider the outgoing radiation as an external source, you can actually treat that consistently and show that the world identities, in presence of external sources, can reproduce these BMS flux balance laws. So what we want to do here is to have a complete holographic description of flat space holography. So we also want to include these sources in the description. We don't want to see them as source, but really as operators in the theory. So how to do that? Well, basically, you can show that this radiation, so the source encode information about the radiation, which correspond to initial and final states in a massless scattering. So what I will do now, and this will be the last part of the talk, is to investigate the massless scattering in a Carolian language. Okay. So more precisely, I will ask the following question. So can we encode the bulk S matrix into some boundary Carolian CFT correlators? Okay. So the strategy is the following. You can start from a bulk operator and deduce the boundary values by taking the larger limit at scry. And basically, this boundary value will correspond to the Carolian operators in my putative dual theory. So let me do that very explicitly. I will consider here a spin S field in flat space. And I will consider it to be massless. And what you can do is to decompose it into plane waves, into Fourier modes. So here, I is just a multi-index notation that will depend on the spin you are considering. P is the momentum of the particles. So these are massless particles, which means that the momentum will be parameterized by the energy, omega, and WW bar, which are the coordinates on the celestial sphere, which indicate the direction of the null momentum. So epsilon here is just the polarization tensor of the field. So now what you can do is to take the larger limit. So you start with this bulk field. You take R going to infinity. And you use what we call the stationary phase approximation to find the boundary values of the bulk field. So this is what I'm doing here. You get this phi out, which is the boundary values at scry plus, and this phi in, which is the boundary value at scry minus. And you can get the expression of these boundary fields in terms of the creation and annihilation operators. So this boundary operator here just corresponds to insertions operator for a massless scattering between scry minus and scry plus. So now something that you can always do is to start with an S-matrix element, which is usually written in momentum space. So it will in particular depend on the energy of the particles. You can rewrite it in position space. So you just perform the Fourier transform on this S-matrix element to trade the omega dependence for the U and V dependence. So U and V are the retarded and advanced time at scry plus and scry minus, and ZZ bar the coordinates on the celestial sphere. So these are just coordinates at the boundary of the space-time. And so the question is, can I interpret this object, Cn, which is written in position space, and it contains information about the S matrix, as a correlator of Carolian CFT operators? Okay, so that will be the goal here. But to do that, I have to tell you what are the Carolian CFT operators. And to do that, I will define a notion of conformal Carolian primary field. So that will be a field phi that transforms in the following way under the action of BMS symmetries. So here you recognize this T, which is a supertranslation, and Y and Y bar, which are the superrotations. And you have the K and K bar, which are called the Carolian weights. So this is exactly the analog of a primary field in a CFT. This is just adapted for the BMS symmetries. And in particular, these Carolian weights are just the conformal dimensions in CFT. Let me also say that this definition of Carolian primary can be obtained from a Carolian highest weight representation. So if you are familiar with the highest weight in CFT, you basically have this part for the Virasoro algebra, but you also have an additional condition that comes from the supertranslations. So they look very similar. And what you can show is that these representations are actually unitary representations for the Carolian algebra. So these are precisely the representation that you want to consider for the holographic description of the spacetime. So just a technical comment is that if you start with a field, phi, which is a Carolian primary, and that you take the time derivative of this field, then you get another Carolian primary, which has a shifted weight, plus 1/2, plus 1/2. Okay? Okay, so now I'm ready to state the holographic correspondence. So here, the Carolian operators that I've just defined, so my Carolian primaries, will correspond to the boundary values of the bulk field that I obtained before by taking the limit r going to infinity. So remember that we just obtained this field here, phi out and phi in, by taking r going to infinity in the bulk. And so this will correspond to my Carolian operators at the boundary. And this identification will fix for you the Carolian weights for the fields. So they will be fixed in terms of the helicity of the fields implied in the scattering.
Can you explain a bit more of that?
So why it's fixed? Or right. So the bulk field, yes. You can show that there are different ways to get it, but the bulk field will transform in the Poincaré algebra. And this will induce the Poincaré algebra at infinity. So these boundary fields will also transform in this representation. And you can show that this representation is exactly what I was writing here. So this is just the kind of translation of the Poincaré symmetries at the boundary, which correspond to these global conformal Carolian symmetries. So that's why you get these transformations. And basically,
the weight right. 1 plus S comes for J1 plus J.
Right, so this is a
specific weight.
It really comes from the computation. So the thing is that this field, this boundary field, will have some fall off in R. So if you take the bulk field and that you expand it in R, then there will be some fall off in R here. And depending on the value of the fall off, which will depend on the spin, you will get different Carolian weights. Okay. So that's what basically fix the Carolian.
S here is what you call J after.
Here it's ready to spin, the other is the helicity. So J can be plus or minus S.
Yes.
Right. It depends if you are incoming or outgoing, so that this definition will take that into account. There is an epsilon here that actually take care of the fact that if epsilon is plus one, it means that you are outgoing. If epsilon is minus one, you are incoming. So that's why you get this epsilon. So now if you apply this definition for gravity, so the k is s equal 2, then you get that the Carolian operator is just the asymptotic shear that I introduced before. And you can indeed show that the Carolian weight in that context using this formula correspond to 3 half minus 1 half. And if you look at the transformation here, this corresponds to the transformation of the shear, which is obtained by acting with the Lie derivative on the matrix. So everything is consistent.
Maybe for people who are less familiar with this k, right, k bar, is that the conformal dimension is the sum of k plus k bar.
Right,
so all these
exactly.
things are always conformal dimension 1, for no matter what.
Right, exactly. So if you sum these two weights, k plus k bar, it's always equal to 1.
So this fits, all these fits. And then the spin is just the difference, which is the spin.
Right, yes, exactly.
For people who are not familiar.
Yeah, thanks.
And maybe the conformal dimension 1, what you were saying is that it's related to a field that if you have a solution of a box phi equals 0, then it goes like 1 over r times.
Right, exactly. Uh-huh. And then this behavior will be shifted depending on the spin.
Yes.
Right. Thanks.
Just to make it more complex.
Yeah. Okay, so that's the first part of the identification. The second part is just to identify the Carolian correlators, so the correlators of these Carolian primaries, with the scattering amplitudes written in position space. So remember that you can take a scattering amplitude here in momentum space, perform a Fourier transform, and obtain an object which is defined in position space at infinity, and you identify that with the correlators of these boundary operators. And so these amplitudes in position space at scry, I will call them Carolian amplitudes by analogy with the celestial amplitudes, because they have basically an interpretation in terms of correlation functions of Carolian CFT operators. So now you can show that this dictionary is actually compatible with what people in ADS would call an extrapolate dictionary for holography. So if you take the correlators in the bulk and that you push them at infinity, you will get correlators of Carolian CFT operators. So this definition is compatible with this. So this comes from the fact that we identify the boundary values of the bulk field with my Carolian operators in the dual theory. Of course, you can show that this identification here is completely consistent with the action of the symmetries. So in particular, the Carolian amplitudes will satisfy some Ward identities for the BMS symmetries. So this is what I'm writing here. And it works a bit like in CFT, where the low point correlation functions are determined by the symmetry. So it will be the same here. The 2-point and 3-point correlation functions will be fixed by the Carolian symmetries. But then the higher point function will provide some non-trivial information about the dynamics of the dual theory. So that's why it's interesting to compute these Carolian amplitudes, is because we want to have some information about the dynamics in the dual theory. An interesting fact in Carolian CFT is that if you solve these Ward identities for the 2-point function, which is what I'm doing here, you get basically two branches of solution. One is called the electric branch. So it's the one which is dependent on the retarded time coordinates. And it involves this delta function here. So it's a delta in the angles. But there is another branch, which is called the magnetic branch. And this one is time independent. And it corresponds to the 2-point function of a CFT in one dimension lower. So here I'm working in three dimensions of boundary. So this is the branch of a 2D CFT. What I will show in a minute is that the relevant branch for scattering amplitudes in flat space is this electric branch, so this U-dependent branch. A remark here is that the delta function that is appearing here is not a problem from the point of view of Carolian holography, because 50% of the Carolian CFT will involve these delta functions in the angle here. So all the electric type of Carolian CFT. This is, of course, different from the case of celestial holography, where a CFT which has a contact term as a low point function is kind of problematic. This is non-standard in CFT, but this is completely standard from the point of view of the three-dimensional theory.
When you say yes, there's two branch, you could have a linear combination of the two. It has to be either
right. So all the examples of Carolian CFT I know in the literature are either electric or magnetic.
From the point of view of the symmetry.
From the point of view of the symmetry, both are allowed.
So you can have linear.
In principle, yes, yes. But then you will need a coupling between a magnetic and an electric Carolian CFT, which is.
If I just extrapolated the two-point function, I would have thought that I would know the combination of both.
Yes,
right.
That would be my next.
And so I think, like with Ivan, we at one point we tried to do this, and we had like one combination. I thought there was some log U there. I'm a little confused, but like one of the two is completely like zero frequency, right?
Right. So when you specify that to certain weights here, k and k bar, which will correspond to the weights of relevant for holography, then you get this logarithm.
Yeah.
So I will discuss that.
So it's also kind of, I think you do get actually a very specific combo of the two, but one of the two is like zero unless you're at zero energy scattering, and so it doesn't appear for a lot of what Andy's doing. So a settle point approximation like latches onto the contact term only, but both would be there for the scry one.
So from the point of view of the scattering amplitude, I only get the electric one, but only
because the magnetic branch only gets a contribution at zero frequency, right?
But I don't see it because we get one term which is time independent in this computation, but it's still proportional to this delta function.
Exactly right. So the time.
So maybe you can reinterpret it as a magnetic branch, but that's.
I think there's another term which is the magnetic branch that's there, as from like usually like phi of like whatever. You're literally taking like the phi of x one and y like one of them to scry, right? And so then there's going to be the constant term which is 1/1 like. Z minus W squared, R squared, or something like that. And that should be there, but it isn't there in the anti-settle point approximation, and he's fine dropping it because he's always assuming like omega R is large, even though omega goes to zero first, we fuck that up. So.
Okay, I will be curious to see in the computation that's interesting. So actually, we show the computation of the two-point function, and then there we can see it.
You go to the previous slide?
Yeah.
I think that's what you're talking about. The last line, you say you have a limit. If you were doing that limit.
If you actually do that limit, you have another term. You can literally say, right? Like 1/(x − y)² the leading term is the R squared Z minus W squared term, right? And so like there is a term that's there.
So that would correspond to the soft modes or the...
contributes to the soft part because I have to transform a constant
and
something like a delta. Right? Yeah, I think it's there. And if anything, the thing I don't know is that connection should be related to like Diksha and the recent papers where like they have an analytic correlation.
Right. Okay, that's interesting because it seems that they are considering some position space amplitude. So I would be curious to see the
time surface.
The evaluation with that.
Just something. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, sure.
From the intrinsic Carolian point of view, you can actually show that having both electric and magnetic turn on is not Carroll boost invariant. So that's the subtlety.
So that would be interesting. So what I'm saying is
these have shown it explicitly from an effective action perspective. Yeah. You cannot have both without if you impose Carroll boost invariant.
So what's fun is I could say that from the extrapolator, I think there is both, and then I have no clue what interesting interpretation.
Well, but this create a challenge in the dual theory that is to write down a Carolian theory where this boost invariance is kind of broken in some sense.
Well, I think we expect some of the boost invariants to be broken precisely because the Carolian primary conditions here only hold for like the single particle operators, right?
Yeah, this is just saying that there is a completely different route to show that having both of them is simultaneously would violate Carroll-Boosting invariants, and you can say it even differently. It would imply a dispersion relation for the scalar field, which is non-trivial. This cannot arise because if you just take a massless scalar field and you solve Klein-Gordon, you get omega 1 equals c times k, and you have to send c to 0 to get here. Mm-hmm. So it's very hard to see it from the limit, but intrinsically Garonian, if you don't require boost invariants, then you can have it.
Sure, but then is that possibly a good thing? Or can I phrase that in like the...
I don't want to put the...
Yeah, at this stage, actually, these guys will satisfy all the Ward entities. I'm not breaking anything, but probably if you take the combination of both, then you have to allow some breaking in the Ward entity. So that's right.
You cannot get the combination.
Yeah, exactly. Right. But this comes from Poincaré invariants, I would say. So
can I ask one more question? So I completely agree that this is true for the operators you're looking at. But for example, you know, there's other representations of Carolian symmetry, right? So there can be ones with like non-trivial mass squares.
Yes. So there are highest weight or induced.
That changes the form of this Ward identity for you, right? Like,
yes. Yes, here I'm already considering the highest weight, which seems to be the relevant one for the radiative sector.
Exactly.
But,
Right. So, but, that if it's fine that we change that Ward identity because these operators now are not necessarily this,
but that means that the bulk is giving a prediction about features of the boundary that is not what we expect intrinsically.
Yeah.
Actually, maybe I have a comment about that. So, before I mentioned this non-radiative sector, and it seems that this non-radiative sector is more of a magnetic type.
Yeah.
Because in three dimensions, for example, you can show that the Carolian CFT at the boundary is purely magnetic.
Yeah.
It's not electric. So probably to understand flat space holography, you need a kind of coupling between the two. So I will not be surprised that you find some magnetic.
Static stuff is somehow, there's a sense in which these low energy physics is magnetic branch type. It's like the zero most.
The soft mode, yeah.
And the soft limits are related to the bonding mass and classic recently. So I guess I wouldn't be surprised if the charges or whatever story you're saying is.
Mm-hmm.
That this same thing that Roman is saying is brutal for the boundary theory because it's really not what people have called Carolian field theory so far, which is good. It might be that either this symmetry is completely pure pH, so we don't care about it, or it's somehow broken. And the breaking pattern is kind of interesting. The way the bulk breaks apart.
I mean, I think
let's see what happens for the amplitude and then otherwise I will not manage to.
You're the vibes are very much that you're the chair.
It'll be fine. Yes.
Thank you.
Right. So, this is actually an important slide because it makes the link between Carolian and celestial amplitudes. So these are. The celestial amplitudes, they are defined by taking the Mellin transform on the usual S matrix element. And the nice properties about these Mellin space amplitudes is that they can be reinterpreted as correlation functions of CFT operators, so operators living on the celestial sphere. And so now the question is, what is the relation between the Carolian amplitudes that I've introduced before, which are amplitudes in position space obtained by taking the Fourier transform, and these Mellin space amplitudes, which are here? So basically, you have to take the combinations of the Fourier and the Mellin transform to go directly from position space to Mellin space. That's the relation. And this is what I'm writing here at the level of the amplitudes. So this integral here does the job of mapping Carolian amplitudes to celestial amplitudes, which means that for scattering processes, we are describing the same thing in a different language. And if you look at that at the level of the operators, here in the right-hand side, you have a Carolian operator, which is living at null infinity that depends on u, z, and z bar. And in the left-hand side, you have a celestial operators, which is living on the celestial sphere. And if you apply this integral transform, it basically trades the time dependence of the Carolian operator for the conformal dimensions of the celestial CFT operator. So that's how you recast the information about Carolian operators in a 2D CFT. You can actually show that all these dictionaries consistent with the extrapolate dictionary that was discussed in the context of celestial holography by Sabrina, Andrea, and Emilio. Okay, so now I gave you the general definition of Carolian amplitudes. So now let me give you some examples of that, so examples of computation of these position space amplitudes. And I will start with the most simple example, which is the two-point function. So it's given here in momentum space. And basically, if you apply this Fourier transform that I mentioned before, so you have to apply two Fourier transforms, you get this integral here. The problem about this integral is that it's divergent. So it has an IR divergence that you can regulate. And so you can treat it properly. It's important if you want to show that it satisfies the Ward identity. So you cannot just throw away this divergence. You need to keep it in the discussion. But there is a way to kind of circumvent this problem, is that I told you before that if you take the time derivative of a Carolian primary, you get another Carolian primary. So here, what I'm doing for the discussion is just to take the time derivative of this Carolian amplitude here to get this Carolian amplitude, which takes a simpler form, I would say. And there is no divergence, because the divergence that is appearing in this integral is time independent. So it disappears once you take the time derivative. OK, so this is the two-point Carolian CFT amplitude. And you can map it on the two-point celestial amplitude by just using the dictionary that I presented on this slide. So everything is consistent. So in the paper, we also computed the expression for the three-point functions. You have to go into 2-2 signature if you want to have a non-vanishing result in that context. But you can do it, and again, check with celestial holography that you get the correct result. We also computed the four-point functions, which give you the first the first dynamical constraints on the Carolian CFT. And again, you can map it with the four-point function in celestial amplitudes. But let me directly go to the endpoint MHG amplitudes. So you can start with this Park-Taylor formula. And here I'm writing it for gluons. So it's a three-level MHG amplitude. And again, you can apply this Fourier transform to go into position space and use the following parameterization of the delta function that correspond to the momentum conservation in flat space. And that allows you to get this very compact form for the Carolian amplitudes. So this is the endpoint MHV Carolian amplitude. And it involves an integral, IN here, which is given explicitly here. And this integral can be computed case by case. So in the paper, we give the expression of the 5- and 6-point function explicitly. But you can also write an expression for all n if you assume some specific kinematic regime that will kind of simplify this theta function. And you get this, this LG, this denominator here. So it seems that you get a very kind of simple form for the MHG amplitudes. And they are very interesting, of course, because they provide some non-trivial dynamical constraints on the Carolian CFT. Let me also say that here I presented the result for gluons, but you can also do it for gravitons. The formula are just a bit more complicated here. But the interesting thing is that they amount to compute exactly the same integral. So the integral that you get at the end is exactly the same. So if you manage to compute it for gluons, you can also compute it for gravitons. And let me also say that these Carolian amplitudes seem much more simpler than the celestial amplitudes for the MHG sector, which involves some hypergeometric functions, so some complicated integrals that you cannot solve. But again, we show that this expression match on the celestial case once you apply all the integral transform that I mentioned. Yes, we also looked at this collinear limit of amplitudes. So this is a limit where basically two momenta of the particles are taking to be collinear. So this is a kind of standard result in amplitudes. And again, you can take the position space result of that. So you just apply the Fourier transform. And you can reinterpret this result as Carolian CFT OP. So that's what we are doing here. This is exactly in the same spirit than the way the celestial OP were obtained originally. So you can show that actually the formula look very, very similar. So it means that you are on the right track. We checked in the paper that these formula were actually invariant under the action of the Carolian symmetries, which means that this definition of OPE is compatible with the kind of non-local nature, the ultra-local nature of the Carolian CFT. So that's compatible with the symmetries, and that might be an interesting starting point to bootstrap the Carolian amplitudes. We also computed, thanks to this OPE, the action of LW1 plus infinity symmetries on the Carolian operators at scrime. So we just basically smeared one of the Carolian operators along a generator of scrime. And that allowed us to compute in the paper this action at nil infinity. And we can see that beyond a certain spin, this action becomes non-local, as expected. We also discuss a relation between twister space and these Carolian operators. So you have a direct way to understand these Carolian operators from twister space. And this is very nice because in twister space, these LW1 plus infinity symmetries have a natural interpretation in terms of some geometry. So it means that you can actually directly deduce these symmetries and find the action at nil infinity. So I think Laurent will have a paper on that very soon. And finally, we check that this result is indeed consistent with the celestial holography result by just using the dictionary. Okay, so now let me just conclude by summarizing what I've said and mentioning some perspectives. So here I've tried to argue that there were two approaches towards flat space holography, this Carolian approach and this celestial holography proposal. And I've tried to argue that they were actually related through some integral transform, at least for the massless scattering. I've also tried to convince you that Carolian holography was a useful path to tackle the problem of flat space holography. And especially if you are interested by this, by the relation with the ADS-CFT correspondence through some flat limit process, which was successfully applied in the context of 3D gravity, but also beyond that, also in 4D, for example, so you can uplift some of the results there. The extrapolate dictionary look very simple in Carolian holography. It just corresponds to the boundary values of the bulk correlators. And the other interesting thing is that Carolian physics has applications beyond flat space holography, which means that you can be inspired by this framework to study maybe some interesting system. And finally, let me mention here two maybe interesting perspectives. First, now that we have some OPE, some definition for OPE in the Carolian CFT, it might be the time to start a kind of bootstrap for Carolian CFT and maybe saying something about scattering amplitude in flat space. And another thing is that in this talk, I essentially focused on a bottom-up approach to flat space holography. But it would also be interesting to discuss some top-down models. So for example, via C going to zero limit at the boundary, which will give you some explicit example of Carolian CFT, or via the relation with twister theory that we discussed in the paper. Okay, I will stop here. So thank you very much for your attention.
Yes. Can you comment about quantum gravities? So it's simple gravitons and stuff, like classical gravitons.
Right. So it's C level, yes.
What would happen? So I guess you would quantize the boundary theory, and then you would say something about gravity.
Right. Of course, the big goal of this program. So here I'm really bottom up, which means that I'm trying to deduce some possible aspects of this Carolian CFT, but the goal would be to kind of construct a Carolian CFT at the boundary, which will describe quantum gravity, maybe in a non-perturbative way, like in ADS-CFT, typically, that you would have a CFT and you would be able to say some to make some statements about quantum gravity in a non-perturbative way. That would be the long-term goal. Here, it's essentially tree-level for the amplitudes. But okay, the goal is, for example, to find the analog of this large n parameter in the Carolian CFT and so on. But this is really the top-down approach to holography.
Thank you.
I think we are far from that.
Can I just stare at the throughput function for a minute? I don't know.
Yep.
Also, my business shifts. Sorry,
it was there. Yeah.
I don't see the OP. Can you?
The OP, yes.
Right. I think it's okay. So is there anything interesting that you can see, like, I guess if you try to formally, like, it's a little bit different form because you have an integral now over the location of the particle that you probably are trying to interpret as, like, some OP block or, I don't know, like,
Yes. So you can actually write, we provide, I think, like three alternative formula of this OPE because in some of the formula you can really write it as a sum over the descendants with respect to Z bar and to U.
Yeah.
So here I'm just taking exactly like in the same spirit than in celestial CFT, the Z12 going to zero.
Yeah.
And then you can rewrite it as a sum over some descendants in I put this formula because it's the one on which I check this invariance under the BMS symmetries, and I think this is the most convenient one maybe for the computations. But
so what is the argument that U can read? U is at U two plus.
Oh, it's U two plus T U 12. So U 12 is U 1 minus U 2.
Okay, so it's no longer a null line.
Right. Yes. So you start with U1 and then you go along the line.
You move both U1 and Z, right? So you move this,
What's P?
This is a number on which you have to sum. So basically that comes from here. You have a sum over J, the LCT. So you have to sum on P and the sum is restricted by these inequalities here. So that's a kind of parameter on which you are summing. That comes from this formula where you have a sum on the LCT.
And how does that relate to the ultralocality of the two-point function you had before?
So I don't see immediately the point with the relation with the two-point function, I would say. Mm-hmm. It's a bit like in a celestial CFT. I don't see directly the link with this delta function and the OPE that are fraction of Z and Z bar.
Right. So what kind of function can you do both for your transform and Brownian transform?
What kind of thing?
Ah,
the amplitudes basically. That's the kind of the most basic example is.
It's like you can hit temperature distributions with Fourier transform. That's
right.
Asking something analogous to that with.
Ah, okay. So the regularity properties. Fourier is probably like L2 or something like this,
exactly.
and Mählin space. Okay, I don't know. I don't remember all the, but usually we are applying that on this kind of distribution. So. We are definitely outside of this, which is not surprising. So here we are getting some divergences, which in a sense is a translation of that, I guess.
It's in the way.
Mm-hmm. Also, can you say more about the fractons?
The fractons?
Yeah.
Yes. So what I know is that so the fractons are objects which are used in condensed matter.
Yes.
And you can show that there are some symmetries for the fractons, in particular this dipole symmetry. And you can reinterpret this dipole symmetry as a Carolian boost. So if you look at the symmetries for the fractons, they are exactly Carolian symmetries if you do this identification.
So
you can interpret it as a
symmetries.
Yes. That's the key. So the relation between dipole symmetry and a Carolian boost.
Thank you.
And then you can reinterpret that as a Carolian particle and see what you can do.
Well, I mean, it's kind of Aristotelian, if you really. The fractal is more Aristotelian than Carolian. But
is Aristotle? What does that mean?
It's really, you know, you don't boost. You don't even boost. You have just time and space.
Okay.
Because fractal is a layer, right? So
yeah.
You really don't. You cannot, as you evolve, do this, which would be the Carolian boost.
Yeah.
But it really it's not even clear of that, I would say. But okay, there's clearly
at least the algebra is the same.
Yeah.
Can we interpret that?
Right.
And I think there are interesting paper by
like this because I wasn't sure it was so relevant.
No, thanks. Thanks for the
all right. Questions? Online questions?
From Chile?
No questions. So then let's thank Roman again.
Thank you. Thank you very much.